So when you came onto the force, you came on through transit.
And I did.
Talk about that. What were the atmospherics? What was the city like? I mean, that was a long time ago.
I joined the transit police on January 5th, 1983. So when I leave next Saturday is my last day. I'll be a month short of 37 years. And this city was a totally different place. Now, you ride the subway now? You might have complaints about it, but bring yourself back 37 years where there was no air conditioning, no heat. The doors usually didn't work. There was graffiti all over the trains. When I first came out, I went to District 1, which is in Midtown. I was there for 3 weeks for training. And then they sent us up to, I was sent up to District 3, which is on 146th and St. Nick. And I did train patrol from 8 at night to 4 in the morning by myself. And we rode the A line from 168 and Broadway to J Street in Brooklyn. Did about 3 round trips a night. Either that or you did the D line from 34th and 6th up to Bedford Park Boulevard in the Bronx.
One of the things is that throughout your career, you've had this reputation for relationship with people outside of law enforcement, with people in the community. Did that come to you early on, like the idea that if you're going to be part of preserving law and order and peace and tranquility,
that it's going
to be in those relationships?
That came quick. And I realized that doing train patrol. You know, who's riding the subway back in 1983 at 2:30 in the morning? Believe it or not, people going back and forth to work. And during train patrol, they had all sorts of rules. But one of the rules is that you could only ride in a car for 3 stops. After 3 stops, you had to move to another car. So every time I moved to another car, of course, you take a look in, see who's there. Mostly what I saw was a look of relief that there was a cop in this train car for at least a couple of stops. And I can catch my breath and feel safe. So at that point, I knew that this was the right job. And as a transit cop, you're not in a car. You're not in an RMP. You're at the station. You're riding a train. You're walking to platforms. They had a couple of cars, but not many. And you're interacting with people all day long, whether it's asking directions or just engaging in conversation. It was, in some ways, I think, and that I doubt this will ever happen, I think all the new cops coming out of the academy should spend 6 months in the subway.
What's interesting is that I'm just wondering in terms of, do you remember the first time where you had to use force to preserve order and protect people?
Yeah, I do. I do. It was, I was on train patrol. I was between Broadway, Nassau, and High Street in Brooklyn on the A train. And there was an assault in progress. I had to come up, and I had to use force to restrain the person that was attacking what turned out to be an off-duty cop.
Wow. How far into your career was that?
A couple of months into train patrol.
Wow. And then did you ever have to fire your weapon in the course of your duties?
No, but I was when I was the CO of the 4-4, we responded to a gun run on Shakespeare Avenue, and we got out of the car, and the guy supposedly had the gun. He said the gun was in a brown paper bag, and lo and behold, we pull up, and there's a guy matching that description holding a brown paper bag, and we chased him into Shakespeare, and he turned around, and he fired at us, and Officer Kevin Costello, he's retired, he returned fire twice. Nobody got hit, and we were able to apprehend the bad guy on the second floor.
Now, in terms of, by the numbers also, if I remember correctly, because I started reporting around that time, the homicide numbers, so you could just, I mean, it was a different city.
In 1990, it peaked at 2,245. 17, we had under 300. 18, we had under 300. Right now, we're at 291, so we're probably going to be a little bit over 300. But, you know, you look at the homicide rate per 100,000. Right now, we're about 3.4 per 100,000. Back in 1990, it was 30 per 100,000.
I've noticed from covering the police department and the engagement of the community that, in many ways, before the tremendous national controversy around immigration, that even going back to the Giuliani years, that beat cops had the kind of approach about undocumented people. They had to say that if you were working and taking care of your family, they were on your side. That it seemed that they didn't. There wasn't a kind of. They weren't trying to be the federal immigration police.
No, I've never. And there was an executive order in the 1990s from Giuliani that city employees, and I'd have to do a little bit more research to quote it exactly. You're not allowed to ask people's immigration status upon encountering them. And I think that's good. I mean, it's estimated that there's about 500,000 undocumented people in New York City. And anything that I've tried to do over the last 3 years was to build trust with all New Yorkers, and including undocumented people. They have to feel safe enough to come to us to report crimes so we can investigate them and make sure we keep them safe, too. So I think that's an important part of who the NYPD is.
Now, you, over the arc of your career, starting in the subways, you've seen the change. I think we've both been around long enough to remember there was a period where we reached a consensus after Geraldo Rivera's reporting about the severely mentally ill being deinstitutionalized. And we were supposed to come up with group homes. We didn't do the group home part. Can you talk about the deinstitutionalization, which is a national issue, mm-hmm. and how that impacts the work of police in terms of folks who are not, because around the country we're finding severely mentally ill homeless people in libraries, mm-hmm. in transit areas, mm-hmm. in prisons.
Right.
What does that do to policing?
Yeah, so there's many issues that we deal with that are well beyond policing issues. They're societal issues, and dealing with the mentally ill is one of them. I came from the 2-5 precinct. We just engaged in a pilot project where we're putting co-response vehicles up there. That's two police officers with a mental health worker, a counselor, in a car, putting them in the 911 queue to respond to calls for people with mental health issues. And I think that's important. We're putting all of our patrol officers, I think we're up about 12,000 now, through crisis intervention training, which is it's a course that the cops like. It's a 4-day course. It's by an outside vendor. It's letting the cops know, you know, how to identify somebody that might have some mental health issues, and more importantly, how to get them the help that they need.
To what degree, though, because we've seen in the case of the tragedy of Yadira Arroyo, EMT paramedic up in the Bronx, Mr. Gonzalez is alleged to have hijacked the EMT of the ambulance. There is what role? I mean, it seems to me that this seems like we need to have a much broader conversation. It's multifaceted in terms of, because in that case, the man, actually, I think his father, went to the police and said, mm-hmm. "Hey, I have trouble with this young man. He's not taking his medicine." Do we need to have a broader conversation about collaboration of society on this church, and community?
So, I don't know the particulars, but you just said that he went to the police,
right?
You know, and where do we turn? So what? If there's an issue, we bring that person to a hospital. Then it's up to the hospital to make an evaluation, a medical and mental health evaluation, whether or not that person needs additional treatment. And then if they do need additional treatment, now what is that treatment? Now this is a national issue. I think that the United States is a great country, but we need to work harder at dealing with people that have mental health issues. There's an expectation that they get help. And if they get help or go for help, that they tell the truth, which is very difficult at times. And if they get prescribed medication, they take that medication. That's a lot to ask for somebody that needs help. So I think that we need to do more to help people with mental health challenges.
What do you look for in a police officer? What are the qualifications? Like if you have an interaction with someone and they say, you know, I'd like to be a member of the NYPD, what are the kind of questions you'd ask them?
Well, first of all, you have to like people. That's the essence of this job. You have to be able to communicate. And, you know, if you're a 20-year-old person, you might not have that skill. We can build upon that. But you have to want to come into this job to help people, to make a difference. And, again, that might sound kind of cliche, but it's the truth. That's why most people become cops. We're not making a ton of dough here. The benefits are okay, but if you're going to take this job, your heart better be in it, and you better want to help people, and you also have to adapt to the work schedule.
Right, right.
You have to, you know, you're not, this is not a 9-to-5 job. I know the job I'm in is certainly not a 9-to-5 job, and I know the cops out there, you know, working day tours, 4-to-12s, working midnights, you know, working birthdays, anniversaries, holidays. Nobody has off on New Year's Eve. This job, and I'm sure if you spoke to Ray Kelly and if you talked to Bill Bratton and whoever else held this job, this is all-consuming.
Great. Okay. Thanks for your service, sir.
No problem.